Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
You've got questions? O'Reilly Auto Parts has answers. Need a pro you can trust? We've got that too. No matter what you need, our professional parts people have the training and expertise to help you do things right. Deep automotive knowledge. Just one part that makes O'Reilly stand apart. The professional parts people.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
You know what got me with that? And I don't know what your reaction was, but like meeting the donor. Like I just had like a little bit of like a reaction there of like, what would that feel like?
Like a good reaction or a bad reaction?
Yeah. Do you mean nervous?
Like nervous. Uh-huh. Like I would say like a little bit nervous. Oh, I don't know how did you have any reaction to that at all or no?
No, I think that's wonderful. Again, like the more I'm hearing, it seems so much more ethical than when I've looked into other choices. That's the goal with your company. And I really, really appreciate that. And that's what I would want, right? If a donor was not going to be like a friend of ours or something, then I would want to get to know them. And also, like you said, have them feel comfortable and that we would be a match for,
for them,
their biological child.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all. The show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie. I'm your gay host, as always. And this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA plus families in all of our beautiful identities. And I take pride in that. All of our identities. We are representing this community as best we can. And this episode is actually a really, really special one because we are in our fourth episode in a little mini series I'm calling Nicole and Shannon Want a Baby, or Do They? In which Nicole, my assistant, and her wife Shannon are accompanying me in interviews. And we are interviewing different folks who have organizations or agencies that help us queer folks on our paths to parenthood. So if you haven't listened to any of the other episodes with Nicole and Shannon, you might want to go back and listen. We hear Nicole and Shannon's episode in the first one, and then we talk with someone who helps with adoption grants, if you'd like to go down that path. And we talked with a big sperm bank, California Cryobank, and the pros and cons of using a bank like that. And today we are diving into the known donor route, y'all, with a person named Danielle, who owns an agency that helps match folks with known donors. The agency is called Seed Scout, and I'm going to get into it a little bit. But before I do, before I talk about Danielle and Seed Scout too much, I just want to mention one little tiny thingy. The Queer Family Podcast won another award, y'all. Yes, baby. Yes. Dance with me. Hoo, hoo, hoo. We did. We won a podcast award. It's the Podcast Awards. And this is the award, if you've been listening for years, this is the one where I'm usually hounding you like crazy. Vote for me, vote for me, vote for me, because it is listener votes that help decide who wins. However, this year, I completely forgot to do that because I've been too busy. And suffice it to say, it didn't matter because guess what? We won anyway. Yay, we won in the Feast of Fools LGBTQIA plus category, and I couldn't be happier. So celebrate a little bit with me. I couldn't do this without all of you. And now I will have another award to add to my shelves of awards over there. What do you do with awards, folks? Can somebody tell me? Because they just seem to just sit there and look pretty. I don't really know what to do with it. Anyway, so I just have to keep mentioning them. Anyway, we won an award. Thank you, Podcast Awards. Out of 8 other folks in our category, we are the winners. So yay, yay, yay. Okay, back to the subject at hand, the known donor route. This is a really great route for families like ours, and a lot of folks choose this route, and I can completely understand why somebody would want a known donor. I actually contemplated using a known donor myself when Anne and I were in the process. And it was really fun chatting with Danielle and her agency, Seed Scout. And now, of course, naturally, Danielle is an advocate for the known donor process over using anonymous or open ID donors at a sperm bank, which is the way I made my babies, because after all, it's how she built her own family. And she's really passionate about helping others understand the advantages of going that route. And I commend her for that. And now I just have to say, full disclosure here, folks, I think I got a little defense. You'll hear it in the conversation. I may have gotten a little defensive, a little salty here and there during our conversation because, you know, I used a sperm bank to grow our family. We went with an open ID donor, so we don't really know who he is. We didn't meet him ahead of time, all the things that go with that. And I am actually more than happy with that choice, as is Anne. But before we dive into the episode, before I roll that tape, I do want to clarify one thing that I wasn't able to bring up during the interview. Danielle emphasizes the importance of having access to real-time updates on known donors' medical history, which is something that her agency makes sure is done through the process of what they do, which is fantastic. And she feels that you don't always get that with big sperm banks. And while she is very right in pointing out some gaps there and how, and she's very right in pointing out that it would be so wonderful to have yearly updates from your donor about their health or their family's health, I did do some digging afterward because I didn't know the facts in the moment. And I just wanted to make sure that we're not giving you facts that are not completely accurate. And please, everything you hear in every single episode of mine, please do your own fact checking and look into it on your own. I am no expert in any way, in anything. And I make that very public. Y'all know that. I'm here to tell the stories, but I did dig a little deeper in here. And I just wanted to make sure that we do give some voice to the sperm banks who didn't have a voice in our chat. And it turns out that some sperm banks do offer ways to notify families about updates to a donor's medical history. So there are choices out there for that in either route. Ultimately, though, it's about what feels right for you and what level of control and comfort can you handle when half of your child's DNA comes from someone else, right? And this decision is completely up to you. But I just did want to throw that in there just to say that I know that the sperm banks are doing their best to listen to donor-conceived people and create the best options for families like ours, as is company Seed Scout. So many amazing options for us. It's awesome. We're really making so many, many, many strides. And then one last thing, like if we could have made our babies the old fashioned way, you know, baby danced, as they say, how much would we even think about the medical history? Would we? I don't know. We're in a unique position as queer families or folks going through fertility care where we have the ability to control more than we would if it was all just like a romantic night together and, you know, some magic happened. So how much should we take advantage of that control? Are we going too far? Maybe the answer is different for everyone. I think it is different for everyone, but I would just advise to just try to keep a clear head when you're in this process. And remember that no matter what, you're going to love your baby and they're going to be perfect to you, no matter how they come about. And like everything in life, you're going to handle the challenges as they come day by day. And I will say one more thing. When we were thinking of using a known donor, we were thinking of using our friend. And we had already been shopping for sperm at a sperm bank for a very long time. And y'all know my story about the search for the superhuman and how I got crazy ruling people out because they had acne and all this crazy stuff. And one night when we were like, are we going to ask Stefan or are we going to do it the sperm bank route? We were out having drinks and we came to the realization that our friend Stefan, who we were thinking of asking, has none, not a single one of the attributes that we were looking for in a sperm donor. Not a single one. We were willing and ready to use him. And we didn't know anything about his medical history whatsoever. But we were willing and ready to use him because why? Because we loved him and we love him. And when we thought that any baby we created with him would be perfect. So Anyway, that's my long, drawn out way of saying, however you decide to do this. And I'm talking to Nicole and Shannon, and I'm talking to any of you who are still in the process, and I'm talking to any of you who've already gone through this and might get salty hearing that the sperm bank route is not as ethical as a known donor route. Whatever decision you made is the right decision, because we all know that we are raising these children. We are creating these families with a lot of love and a lot of intention. And that's what matters. That's what matters. Also, open and honest conversations with our children about where they come from. Okay, that's it. That's all I want to say. We got this, y'all. We got this. And this resource, Seed Scout, is actually a really, really, really excellent option if this is the route you want to take. So take a listen. Let's dive into this interview. I can't wait for you to hear it. And I'm so happy I get to meet all these amazing, amazing, amazing individuals who are really, really, really doing the work to help our community. So, all right, let's roll that tape. Helen, Beulah, Gerson, roll that tape, please. Roll it. Thank you so much.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Danielle.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Hi, Nicole and Shannon.
Hi, Jamie. Oh.
Nicole and Shannon are here, and we are talking to Danielle. And there is a very particular reason we're talking to Danielle. And I think that what we should do is just, Danielle, you should give us your 30-second elevator pitch so that the listeners can know what's happening here. What are we doing? So, Danielle, please give us your 30-second elevator pitch, who you are, why you're here, talking to me and Nicole and Shannon. Are you ready?
Yes.
Get set. Go.
I started my family by using a donor, as everyone in the queer community does. And so my wife and I looked at sperm banks, as everyone starts off basically. And we had a lot of issues with them, namely the amount of half siblings our kids would have, the updated medical history that we would not get from donors and all of that. And so we started a company to fix all of the issues. We went through this on our own, and now we help people find known donors and walk them through all the steps, making it as ethical as humanly possible.
Nice job.
Oh my God. Good job. You made it. I mean, you went a teeny tiny bit over, but I'll give it to you. So I've been pestering Nicole since, like, Nicole, you started working with me for like a year ago, right?
A year ago. Yeah.
And when we first met, I was like, so you have kids, right? And Nicole was like, I don't know if I want them. That's why I started listening to your show. And that's why I wanted to work with you. And we're still in the same place. Nicole and Shannon still don't know. And so I've been going through with them, like in the background, the rundown. Well, you can adopt, you can foster, you can do this. Who's going to carry? You can do a known donor. You can do an anonymous donor, but you want to do the sperm bank. And it's been I keep pestering Nicole and then Shannon, I'm sure, hears about it. So we were like, let's create this mini series and let's find out. So we're going down all the roads that you could possibly take. Danielle, you know, there's a lot of paths we can take as queer folks. And Nicole and Shannon know this too. And anybody who listens to the show knows this because there's over, you know, almost 200 episodes of different paths. So Nicole and Shannon still don't know how they want to do it. So Danielle, can you tell us a little bit about your story? Like before you created the company, let's talk about, you know, your journey to becoming a parent. When did you know you were gay? When did you know you were going to have to use assisted reproduction? Like, take us down the path, if you would.
I think I was like 15 when I came out. So it was pretty young. No one was surprised. Like, that was just me. I definitely went through, like, you know, a lot of things to figure out who my person was going to be, mm-hmm. and found my wife, and she was in med school when we met. She is now a pediatrician.
Oh.
And we got married in May 2 years ago, so it's been just over 2 years. We both have wanted kids our whole lives, right? Like, and so I think I'm not going to have the exact same story on you guys as do we have kids kind of dilemma. Well, I mean, she's a pediatrician, right? Like, you have to want kids if you're working with kids all day. Like, you have to just like be obsessed with them.
I don't know. Do you? I don't know.
I'm just kidding.
I feel like some pediatricians some are like, hell no, I see them every day. I don't want one of those. Like,
true. Definitely not her though. If you met her, it's like she was born to like literally talk to kids all day. But I knew I wanted them. I mean, I was an only child, so I wanted to have like a big family. I was raised so beautifully by like my mom, my grandparents, and I really wanted to like give kids a beautiful life. So what happened actually is that I found out I had BRCA, which is a breast cancer gene. Uh-huh. And when I found that out, I was already like 32 or 33 at that time. So I was like, okay, we're speeding this up. Mm-hmm. So we started looking at banks. And I kid you not, I think we bought every like subscription humanly possible.
To all the big banks.
Every single bank. I mean, even the little banks. Like we were just mm-hmm. like, we spent way too much money on that. Like way too much money on that.
Oh my God, Danielle did so much research for you already.
I know, Nicole, so much.
Okay, so continue. Much. And also, so wait, how did you decide, like, who would carry? Did you know who would carry?
We knew we both wanted to carry.
Okay.
And we knew we both wanted to use our eggs. And okay. we probably would have tried IUI had I not had BRCA. But because of that, I was like, I don't want to pass it on. I want to do IVF and rule out embryos that have it to not give kids a chance of having breast cancer, ovarian cancer in the future. Well, my wife's like 5 years younger than me, which is why she's better at technology, as I mentioned before. But so I knew I was going to go first, especially with BRCA and my age and everything. So we both did IVF. We both use CCRM in Northern Virginia because we live in the DC area. And I just went first because there was like a million reasons, but we're both going to have our own biological kids, like for sure.
That's exactly how my wife and I did it. She's older than me. She went first. Same.
Did you do reciprocal or did you do
no, IVF? We couldn't afford reciprocal. We couldn't even really afford IVF, but we blindly and dumbly went into it because IUI was covered. So when we ended up having to switch to IVF, we were like, yeah, of course, because we just assumed. Now, then we had to like take a loan out against my wife's pension. It was like a whole thing, but we did IVF.
And what they don't tell you is that like insurance doesn't always cover reciprocal, even if they cover IVF, right?
There's that too. So there's different levels of everything. So these are things you need to know.
So see, these are things we don't know.
Yeah. Exactly. Things no. Always happy to be a resource and stuff too. And as Jamie is also, but
yeah.
So we had IVF covered by my wife's employer at that time. And I had BRCA, so they covered mine automatically. And they
That's ended amazing.
Up so it ended up being like very affordable just because of that. But if you actually ask a doctor, like a lot of the doctors will say that IUI is more expensive overall because you have to go through more rounds of IUI to get pregnant.
Possibly. Possibly. Yeah.
Most likely if it's not like fresh sperm, right? Like yeah. I think that's the thought behind it. Mm-hmm. Or yes, possibly. But mm-hmm. it has a lot of potential to be more expensive. So we did IVF. I carried my own embryo. We now have a 9-month-old son whose name is Lucas. But we looked at banks and we were just honestly turned off by all of it. I don't know how else to say it, but like we felt incredibly overwhelmed for different reasons. Mm-hmm. I did not like the options. I honestly felt like a lot of them were 18 and 19 year olds. And I felt like they were not the kind of people that I'd want as a donor because I couldn't imagine that. Like I couldn't picture them being a good person. Like I couldn't picture whether they were a good person.
You were just turned off with it. And did you see adult pictures?
Depends on the bank. Some right. only have one okay. kid picture and some have one adult yeah. picture and mm-hmm. no one has family pictures. Like we were just like, how are we supposed to make a decision about half the genetics of our kids?
And what were your wife's misgivings?
Yeah, my wife's a doctor. So she was like, I don't trust this medical history at all.
Because you all kind of were suspicious of like how you recruit, how do they recruit?
And yeah, they recruit on college campuses. They are mm-hmm. going out on college campuses every single day begging people to sign up. And those are 18 and 19 year old boys. And if you listen to people, like there's someone named Donor Dylan, who was a donor for Zytex. And he talks a lot about how his friends were told they would not qualify unless they had a perfect medical history. And so all of a sudden, everyone had a perfect medical history, which we all know is impossible because none of us have a perfect medical history. If you look back at like grandparents and parents and everything.
And I do want to say, like, take this with a grain of salt too, sure. because like they are doing things to make strides at the big banks too.
Yeah, for sure.
And, but also, yes, like there's truth in everything here, right? So it all depends on like what your level of comfortability is, right? My wife and I had no misgivings with the sperm banks, but we also didn't really think that deep. We just knew that was the path we were going to go and we went with it and we were like, yes. And we liked the guy and we were like, boom, 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 this is it. Although choosing him was like a whole thing, which everybody knows. But if they're recruiting these kids from these college campuses, which is yes, and especially in the past and still in the now time as well, you know, these kids don't have family histories yet.
they don't know
how their grandparents died, many of them yet. A lot of kids, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So that's something to think about. They might be filling it to the best of their ability, but like if my 10-year-old is filling out her medical history, how much does she really know? I'm not saying that donors are 10. Don't say that. I didn't say that, but you know.
Yeah. Even me, if I was asked what my grandparents passed from on my dad's side, I don't know that I would know the exact answer. I could guess, but I don't know the exact answer.
Right.
I'd have to check.
Sounds to me like you're like both of you were just kind of like, what were the intentions of these young fellas coming in here?
Yeah. Then the other part, we were freaked out about how many half siblings our kids were going to have. And we were like, what are we doing? Like we need to make a decision that's as thoughtful as possible in this moment about what we would want if we were those kids. And so we started looking into donor conceived people, because I personally believe that the only way to figure out how our kids are going to feel, or if you have kids, how they would feel, right? Is how people in the past have felt about their own donor conception. And so if you look at We Are Donor Conceived survey and all of these different resources, I mean, I can send you a bunch of things, but there's all these different resources. And there's someone named Laura High. There's all these people that just go and they talk about how they would have, how they feel and how they would have done their conception if they could have had their own decision about this. And almost all of them, I think in the 90 percentile, say a few things. One, they wish they had a known donor, that they wish they could have asked questions at a younger age and been able to know who these people are. Two, they wish that they had fewer half siblings, that they didn't have such a large pod of kids and or of people, sorry. And three, they wish that they had updated medical history. And so that's when we were like, ooh, we didn't even think about updated medical history. And the big issue is, if you use a donor from a bank and they're fully anonymous or even open ID, which is the other option where they are known at 18, you don't get an updated medical history until that age, most likely. And the banks don't even have to give you any updates, even if they do know about it, which you specifically sign in contract.
You can reach out to them. If you have a question, you can reach out to the bank with the open ID. But that doesn't mean that the donor will disclose anything. It's up to the donor. So it does, depend on your donor and who you chose and how they feel. And I do want to say too, I've interviewed a lot of donor conceived people on this show, all of whom were conceived by queer folks and who knew about their donor conception from the start. And I think a lot of these donor conceived groups, a lot of these people in these groups didn't come from queer families, didn't know from the start. There was a betrayal that happened. And I completely understand that betrayal and have talked to donor conceived people who talk about exactly what you're saying. And yes, there needs to be more stringency with these donors and medical and all the things. And also there is something to the children who are raised with complete transparency and who know all about their origin story from the beginning. I'm not saying that those children are not going to grow up wishing they weren't donor conceived too, but I think there is a less chance of it. And I think there's something to our origin stories and how we talk to our children about donor conception that needs to be brought into the picture as well. So, you know what I mean? It's not just completely,
And I don't even know that they all feel like they wish they weren't donor conceived at all. I just think they wish that some things changed, that some things were different, right?
Yes. So
I don't
and think the medical thing, I completely get that. And that is something very important to think about because you're not necessarily going to get updates at all.
Yeah. So if a year after the donor donates, his parents are diagnosed with something and you could be checking your kid. I mean, the most common story, Jamie, I'm not sure if you heard about this. It's an egg donation story, but it's someone named Angela who donated eggs and it was anonymous donations a while ago, maybe 15 years ago or something like that. And she was just diagnosed with something. Oh, I always get this wrong, but it's either HHT or HTT, which is something where you can pretty much have a brain aneurysm and die pretty immediately. And it's autosomal dominant. And so that means it's 50. I'm going to mess this up because my wife's not here to correct me. But it's genetic and it's 50% chance of passing on to offspring. And she obviously did not know about it at the time. There's nothing anyone could have done to test for it. So I'm not saying anyone was in the wrong, but she's trying desperately to reach these families to let them know that they have to test the kids. And the matchmaking companies closed that helped her. And they we've destroyed all of the records. And so they're not able to reach almost any of them. She was able to reach one family and there's not great news from them. It's heartbreaking because she just so desperately wants to try to save them because that knowledge could save their life or expand it by a lot.
Yeah.
So it is, and it's rare, but it does happen.
It does happen. And And also keep in mind too, just, you know, I'm sorry if it feels like I'm playing devil's advocate, Daniel.
No.
I'm not at all. I'm like being the elder auntie who did this already, who did the donor route. And also I want to protect my kids and I want to protect my route. You know, it's all wrapped up in that. But also keep in mind, like any two people who make a baby together could have a very similar situation. We don't know what our family history is going to be a lot of times when we make our babies. And so there is just that aspect too. So if that is something that is like a real big turnoff to you, then by all means, this is like the donor, the open donor at a big bank, not knowing your donor is not the right path for you, right? But keep in mind all the different things that go into this, you know? And we also have the option to control so much more than your average non-queer couple does. And so if we do have the option to control more, like Danielle, to your point,
right?
Why wouldn't we, right? So there's that too. We're going to make Nicole and Shannon, I just want to know how you're feeling right now.
We're throwing a lot at you.
What do you think? No, I love hearing all this. When it comes to half siblings, and I think of like sperm donations, like this weird part, it was on an episode of House once, and it's made me paranoid ever since. I won't get into that plot, but I'm not kidding, but it really has been on my mind. And I was like, because sperm donations can happen, and it can be like dozens and dozens of half siblings. And that is wild to me. And that's unethical to me as well. And correct me if I'm wrong, Danielle, but I saw on your website, you also don't automatically rule out sperm donors if they have like certain medical issues or certain medical histories. And you see that with so many big sperm banks. And also to your point, I'm not going to care if your great grandfather had like type 1 diabetes. I don't know if I'm going to trust if everyone in your family in perfect health. That's going to concern me more. So hearing these two things, that means a lot to me.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so our theory behind not turning anyone down for height, sexual orientation, medical history, anything about them, is that I believe that if you present someone with the option of being completely honest and saying you're accepted no matter what, they will be honest. But if you tell them you won't be accepted if you have any cancer in your family, all of a sudden they have no cancer in their family. And it's like, I don't blame people, right? Like the thought is like, well, that one doesn't really count. I won't mention it. Like, you know, like you try to start making justifications. But to me, the most important thing is that parents know, because we cannot protect kids if we don't know. Mm-hmm. And I grew up with probably parents that were way too anxious medically, but I do think that like there is something to early detection and it really can save someone's life. And I do believe that we should have that option.
Right. And if you're like a starving student living off your financial aid, you just want, you know, you're going to do what you can to get the money to donate your sperm, I suppose. For me, I don't think I could donate my eggs very easily, but everybody's different. You know what I mean? There's a lot to this when you think about it. We don't know if our kids are going to resent us for even the fact that they were raised by gay people in the end, you know, like, God, I hope not. Jeez.
Come on, they have two moms.
Yeah. I mean, it's the best ever, but I mean, who doesn't want two moms?
Literally the dream.
But there are so many unknowns. And also, if we can control the ones that really matter to us, why wouldn't we? I think that's the point.
I agree.
So let's go into kind of, because we haven't even gotten really the full rundown of what your agency does, Danielle.
Basically, what we're doing is we're trying to make sperm donation as ethical as humanly possible, right? Like it's never going to be 100% perfect, but we're really, really, really trying to put, like, our number one concern is the kids, the people that are going to be born.
And that should be.
And it's forgotten all the time. If you look at a lot of different companies, they don't even mention the kids.
That's like one of the donor conceived community's biggest gripes. And you should always center this on, this should be kid centered. The conversation should start from the child's perspective.
Yeah.
Or the person who's been donor conceived.
Right, right. Secondary, we wanted to make sure that it's the most ethical option for parents and for the donor. So all of these people end up being forgotten, because when you have huge corporations, what happens, and this is just America or like the world, right, is profit becomes the most important thing. When we look at like family limits, like we'll start, let me just go off in a tangent for a second and then I'll tell you all the things of the company. Sorry. But when we look at family limits, what I do want to note is that what a lot of people don't know is that when you look at a sperm bank or I don't know if other things too, but let's just say sperm banks for now. When you see a limit of 35 families or 45 families or anything like that, you have to be very careful, because what it is it's counting only families who report a live birth, and it's only counting families in the US that have purchased it through that bank. And this is most of the time. I cannot say every single bank because I have not done the research about every single bank. I think that there's something called the stoplight chart somewhere out there you could look at that they actually did the research. You should listen to them more. But the majority of time, that's the case. So when you're looking at a sperm bank, you want to make sure you're asking, like, are you only counting people who report a live birth? How are you tracking that? Like all of those questions. And then you want to make sure you're asking, what happens to the extra vials after you've hit that limit that you put on the website mm-hmm. of that many families of live births? Because what happens is about 30%, someone tried to do a calculation. I don't know how accurate this is, so take this with a grain of salt. But about 30% of people report a live birth, which means that you have about 70% more than the number you're seeing on the bank's website. And then they take leftover vials once they finally reach that number of 35 or 45 families, whatever it is, and they sell it to other countries, and that doesn't count towards the limit. And you guys can check me on this. You can call banks and ask them, like, they, you know, they'll be honest about it if you ask them. But it's something that no one realized. We did not know that. I've literally been like queer since I was like 15, right? And I had no idea that that was the case until I started digging really deep into this stuff. And so that freaked us out. And so there have been pods of over 200 kids out there. And I'm not saying that's all of the donors, but there have been 100, 200 kids like per donor. So I know you were talking about like dozens and stuff, but it can get way past that. Obviously dependent.
Right. And also like grain of salt, because I've found 5 siblings and we've been digging hard, digging. That doesn't mean they're not out there. It doesn't mean that, but we've only found 5. Doesn't mean they're not out there. Doesn't mean we don't have hundreds out in the world, right? That's a reality that I have to face. Also, like everyone I've talked to, of all of the families I've talked to who've used donor conception, no one has reported. And I'm not saying that that is fast rule, and I'm not rebuking what you're saying at all, Danielle. But no one I have talked to in my 200 episodes, and let's say the donor conceived is not that whole number for sure, have reported hundreds even of siblings, maybe.
Oh, there was an article the other day about a Fairfax donor with like 200 something.
No, I believe it happens. I'm just saying, of the people I've talked to, I haven't heard of it actually happening. So I'm sure, I know it's out there. There's facts out there.
Definitely.
I have yet to meet somebody who has reported it. Perhaps we should do some digging and interview someone.
Yeah, I have a few people, so I'm happy to introduce too.
But they have to be gay though.
Yeah, deal.
Yeah. So they gotta be queer.
There's a lot. And I'm happy to always introduce you to those people. And I'm not saying all of them, right? It really depends how many times the donor donates. If this donor's like, oh, I just want to make like $2,000, they go 20 times. Of course, there's not going to be like 600 kids from that, right? Like it just depends on a lot of different factors. But it's just something to keep in mind. I know that like it's not always worst case scenario, but I think worst case scenario should be brought in to like at least considering options.
Of course.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Okay, so how we work. If you wanted to go this route, if you have kids and you wanted to go this route, then what we would do is we'd ask you to fill out a form that says what you're looking for in a donor. And it would go through physical characteristics, ethnicity, their like any educational background that was important to you, any health history. I don't know if you both are planning to use eggs or just one of you or anything like that, but whoever is, any health history in that family that you'd want to avoid doubling a chance of something for a kid, right? And so then we have currently about 315 donors, and we would go through all of those donors and we would pick out as many options as possible. And if we do not have enough and you are not finding what you're looking for any reason, which is incredibly rare, we would keep pulling, like finding more. And like we use, like, and we can talk about all this in a second.
These would be known donors, right? We didn't talk about that.
Known donors.
So talk about how this is not like, you're not creating your own anonymous sperm bank here. Like you're talking about, so you're like a matching, this is how I see it, right? You're like a matching service for donors that would be in a part of your life, or you create the contract after that with your donor that you choose.
We're a matching service for clients and donors to like meet each other and to like make sure that everyone feels comfortable, because we're all about like consent from both sides. Then we become like the service that walks you through every single step and make sure that you have no questions, and that, or like, we're answering everything. We're finding you all the people that you need to move forward. And the downside to known donors, and I'm going to be completely honest because I've said a lot of downsides to sperm banks. I'm a little biased, if you can tell. But anyway.
If we all are. We had to choose. We chose what we chose, right?
We chose, so no. And look, there's no wrong option. There's just different options, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it depends what everyone needs. The downside is the amount of time it takes and the amount of effort. When you buy a sperm from a sperm bank, you are buying it like add to cart, like you're buying like online shopping, right? It's buy, add to cart, shipped to this address, boom, it's there. You don't have to see all of the work that goes into the back, like behind the curtain work. For a known donor, you have to go through those steps, and it takes time. And it's a little bit more of an emotional roller coaster because you don't necessarily know the genetic test of the donor when you're starting, right? And so like if there's an overlap, like that will come as a shock to everyone, but it's not something that you'll just know like at a sperm bank where there's the genes listed. So that's like definitely the downside. But yes, our company is incredibly known. Everything is transparent. You will know everything. Like you will know the donor, the donor's name. You'll know all of the information possible. You can Google anything you want after. And then we help you to make sure that it's as seamless as possible to go through the steps.
I have two questions. Does it need to be a match on both sides? Like, does the known donor need to agree that they would be having a child with us? Or is it just like our selection?
So the way it works is that people are signing up to be a donor, assuming that they feel comfortable moving forward with that person. What happens, to walk you through it, you fill out a form saying what you're looking for. We show you profiles. It is a PowerPoint presentation of different donors. Each donor has 7 adult photos, their age, their height, their location, their sexual orientation, their relationship status, if they want kids, what they do for a job, what they studied in school, what their parents do, what their siblings do, what sports they played, hobbies they had, like anything like that, right? And then on the side,
how many pages is the questionnaire?
No, the first questionnaire is on Zoom because we're trying to get an idea of who they are. And then we go back and we do a medical history check. So, and it's on a form. Okay. So I don't know how many pages because it's just one really long form. But it's a good question.
Okay. Maybe I'll put it into.
But yeah, so we ask them like about 30 minutes, 20 minutes of questions, something like that. And we give you all that information as your first round. Then on medical history, what you're seeing on the first round is kind of like what a lot of banks ask. It's kind of like, okay, here's a form of like a bunch of questions of, you know, major medical illnesses. Can you tell us like what age your grandparents died and like from what, and like all of these other questions, like anyone in your immediate family have this, 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 this. What we're trying to do is get like a 70 to 80% thorough medical history so you can see the big things in their family and decide if you feel comfortable. Then we wanted to go a step further because I don't think that's enough for having kids. And so what we do is we ask you to pick your 4 favorite donors. We go back to those 4 donors and we ask them for more medical history. So we give them an insanely long form. We ask them to take a few days to fill it out. Ask their family members if they're not sure the answer to something. Like really dig in deep as much as possible. Is it going to be perfect? Absolutely not. In no way am I saying it's going to be their perfect absolute medical history, but it will be as close as we possibly can get to it without checking medical records, which unfortunately does not exist right now. Then we ask for a picture of them as a kid, or a few pictures of them as a kid, a picture of their parents, and a picture of their siblings, because I think it's really important to see what a whole family looks like instead of just one person, because genetics, sometimes you'll look like a kid will look like their uncle, right? Like it's not always incredibly black and white of like what they will look like. And so I just want you to get a feel of like what the family looks like, because I think especially for queer couple, well, for every couple, actually, it's important to kind of find someone that looks like the other partner sometimes, or like, you know, resembles one of your families or anything like that. Then you look at all of that information for those 4 donors and you pick the 2 donors you want to meet with and 1 to move forward with, assuming that donor says yes. very, very, very rarely does the donor feel like it's not a good match. If that happens, we introduce you to another donor. No extra charge, nothing else. We're just trying to get you the best match humanly possible so that everyone feels comfortable and excited to move forward. I want you to feel like if I met this person out at a bar or like, you know, at a like event or whatever it is, I would be friends with them. Like we have very similar morals. We feel like I can just tell they'll be a really good influence on kids if our kids meet them. Like that's the kind of feeling I want you to get from them. Like, you know, they're not homophobic. You know, they're not like, you know, like an inherently bad person.
You know what got me with that? And I don't know what your reaction was, mm-hmm. but like meeting the donor, like I just had like a little bit of like a reaction there of like, what would that feel like?
Like a good reaction or a bad
reaction? Yeah. Do you mean nervous?
Like nervous. Uh-huh. Like, I would say like a little bit nervous. Oh, I don't know how sure. you, what was your, did you have any reaction to that at all or no?
No, I think that's wonderful. Again, like the more I'm hearing, it seems so much more ethical than when I've looked into other choices. That's the goal with your company. And I really, really appreciate that. And that's what I would want, right? If a donor was not going to be like a friend of ours or something, then mm-hmm. I would want to get to know them. And also, like you said, have them feel comfortable and that we would with be us. A match for,
yeah, for them.
Yeah. Their biological child.
And I promise, like, I know it feels like you're on a first date, like with a donor or whatever. Like, I know that's like how you're feeling now, but it flows so easily and people end up coming out of it being like, oh, that was really fun. Like I thought I was so nervous, but that was really fun.
And then with your agency, it's an agency, right? We call it.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like then you can kind of decide, all right, well, we want our relationship with our donor, we want him in the life. Like you can decide together.
Or not,
right? Right. So it's like a choose your own adventure here. Like you have more options to choose your own adventure, which is great, right? Because then we can do it this way. We can do this, you know. And our biggest fear was we didn't want like another family involved in the decisions we made, right? So that's why we decided to go with the bank in the end.
Yeah.
And also it was going to be so much work to do all the steps it takes to establish what the relationship is, make sure we're all on the same page. Let's get a contract. Let's do the thing. Okay. You have to talk to your parents because I don't want your parents coming in, you know, in 5 years saying, well, we have a grandkid. We deserve rights. You know what I mean? So like thinking of all the different things, this is where Danielle's agency would come in. And like, it sounds like you have this all, you have like a formula for figuring it out and you help people with the legal stuff and the,
yeah,
right?
And we'll talk about the steps for sure, because I think you should know like what it is. But yes, absolutely. And a lot of this will be in the contract, right? Like, you know, you agree that you'll tell your family beforehand and that like you're like that you have no rights, that they have no rights. Like this is our child. We have all the custody. We have all the decision making. Like,
and get it signed.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Right, because because you never know how a grandparent's going to act when their son dies, and then wait a second, now I know about these grandkids. I want to, like, you know what I mean. That's why legal. Get the legal.
Yeah, right. So the people who do it on like Facebook groups, which is another option, right? And they don't have a lawyer, and they don't have the donor having his own lawyer, like all of those things, that puts you at risk. Absolutely, I would rather you use a sperm bank than do that, to be honest.
And sometimes it works out. And sometimes it doesn't, right? So, and no shade in how anybody, you know, makes their choices, but like, these are the things. This is why these things need to be talked about so much. And this is why there needs to be more representation of how we build our families so that people like you, Nicole and Shannon, can make well-informed decisions based on what your wants are. Mm-hmm. What do you want your family to look like? Right. And that's why there needs to be more of these conversations.
I agree.
It's so important. Representation matters so much, right? We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Love is love.
Okay. So then once that happens, you do your genetic test, the donor does his genetic test, make sure there's no match. And then the next step would be the semen analysis, just to make sure everything looks okay. If you decide to do IUI, that's incredibly important. For IVF, you can have a little bit worse of a semen analysis because it doesn't have to be perfect. And then the third step is a legal agreement where you'll have your own lawyer that we obviously help you find. And we go through all those steps with you. And then the donor has his own lawyer and all of these things like you're paying for. So the way that a lot of agencies work is that they charge a huge fee and then they say, we'll pay for all of these things. You pay us. But we wanted to be transparent because I was worried that people were going to think I was like upcharging for things. Mm-hmm. And I just don't like anything that's not transparent. And so what we do is we charge you for our time and finding donors and like walking you through the steps. You pay the donor separately, and then you pay the fees separately. So we have like kind of three buckets of like payments. Our fee, $4,500. Donor's fee, $5,000. Donor gets paid at the time of donation. Our fee is upfront. We're starting a payment plan soon, just so you know. Mm-hmm. And then all of the steps in between, about $6,000. Obviously, a lot depends on like what state everyone lives in and things like that. Mm-hmm. But that includes legal, psych, which we'll talk about in a second, genetic testing,
like question
analysis. Yeah.
So it's reminding me a lot of like surrogacy agencies and how they can, they walk, you know, they walk you through the steps. And a lot of these agencies now, they let you do it piecemeal, like one step at a time. Like they help you. Okay. Well, we don't need the whole, you're not going to need the whole $100,000 right off the bat. So let's just start with your egg donor search. And you're going to need that much for this. And then when you're ready, we'll go on to the next step. Is that something that you do? Or is this more like a, we're in this journey and we're going to go and it's not $100,000. Like, surrogacy journeys are very expensive and it's not fair that they have to pay so much and all the stuff. So it wouldn't be that big of a lump sum. However, it's still money.
It's split up naturally based on the steps. So like you don't pay legal until you get to the legal agreement. You don't pay for like the work that goes into the donations, like the FDA steps until you get there. So like there's a lot of like, and you don't pay the donor until the time of donations, right? So there's a lot of steps that are broken up already, but not by much, because what we're worried about is like a donor commits to donating and then you take like 3 years to move forward. And the donor's like, am I still donating to them? I haven't I haven't heard anything. And it takes away the kind of human element of like, you know, like everyone should be moving kind of through it. That does not mean you need to try for pregnancy as soon as you have the sperm. You do not. You can have the sperm frozen and you can, you know, go to IUI or IVF whenever you feel comfortable. But we do ask that people move through the steps.
And once you have that contract signed, then, you know, it's signed. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is kind of similar to the surrogacy thing because you can do the egg donor and then you can put the eggs on ice for you. And then they take their time to fertilize. They can just hold the eggs on the embryos on ice as long as they need to, because that's all done. Right. The genetics are done. That's signed, sealed, delivered. So it is sort of similar, actually, if you can take a little break in there.
Yeah.
Once that part is done. Also, a lot of us don't want to take a break.
It's true.
Like when we're ready, we're ready. Let's go. It's go time. However, it's an option. And we have, ticking time bombs that, you know, guys don't have, or I should say people who don't have uteruses don't have. So, okay. I have a question, but do you two have questions for Danielle?
Wait, I have a couple more things I want to tell you about.
So, you go first and then I'll ask my question.
Okay. So three family limit. That's really important. So no matter what, we do not match a donor with more than three families. There are no exceptions to this at all. So we're not only counting families who report a live birth, even if a family has the sperm and decides we don't want kids after all, or we broke up or whatever it is. I count that as a match because they still have the sperm and they could potentially use it one day and I'm not taking any chances. So that's a three family limit, like the hardest limit ever. Mm-hmm. However, donors are still allowed to have their own kids, obviously, because I'm never going to stop someone from having their own kids. And then they can also donate to a family member. So if they have a brother with male infertility or a queer sister, anything like that, they can donate to like their partners. And then the other exception, like in life, not through us, but in life, is that they can donate to a close friend. And the way that we define that is someone that they had a friendship with a close friendship with before the topic of sperm donation came up between them. It cannot be someone who randomly reaches out, a friend of a friend, anything like that. So maybe there'll be five families out there, but it's still going to be better overall than like 50 or 100 potentially, not every time, potentially. Anyway, okay, that's what I want to say. And then the other thing is that you have to be known by the other families who use the same donor. So you have to let them know of any births as they have to do for you, because my goal is that 23andMe does not shock anyone. I don't want any half siblings coming up that no one knew about. So everyone has to alert each other of any potential medical things that might have come from the donor that no one knew about. Anything like that, that you can help each other, that's like kind of what we request of you. And then the other thing, and this is a big one that like really makes us unique, because I don't know of anywhere else that does this, is that we require a once a year update to the donor about kids. But I'll tell you why in a second. So minimum of a text message with a picture and a sentence being like, she's in kindergarten and she loves soccer, like whatever the update is, so that they know that they're healthy, they're happy, they're safe. Why? Number one, I think we would want that as egg donors. I think we would want to know that kids are okay. I think it's just the more humane way to do it. Two is that if the donor changes his contact information or moves, I want you to know that within the year and not 10 years later when you're looking, like when your kids are asking to meet him and you're like, where do I find this person? So we require that the donor gives a once a year update to medical history if anyone in his immediate family has been diagnosed with anything in that year. Because that's a lot to ask of donors to remember every single year, that's their check-in reminder. So you're like, hey, look how the kid's doing. By the way, like, how's everyone in your family? And then that way you all can exchange information and you can protect kids.
My question kind of goes back a little bit. So you said, like, if we went through this process, have the sperm, does your company help with arranging like putting it on ice? Or is that like another out-of-pocket fee that we would cover?
So we arrange the donation part. Like we help arrange the donation part, the shipping. Once it arrives at the clinic that you decide to use in the Boston area, wherever you are, then they would, then you would pay for storage of the sperm. Okay. At that location, usually, unless they have a contract with like an it's very clinic dependent, but sometimes they'll have a contract with an outside location. And then there also is like, I'm pretty sure there's like a cryobank in New England that might, you know, keep it. I don't know how that works, but they usually know exactly where to keep it because they have a million clients that are going through the same thing. I don't know the price because it really varies per place. I know that we paid like a couple of hundred a year for like 200 a year or something to keep the sperm frozen. Different price for embryos, a lot more expensive. So if you're doing IVF and you just want to keep embryos frozen, I think it's like $700 or $800, at least at our clinic, a year. But anyway, it's just, it varies a lot. So that would be something to ask a clinic.
Do you ever facilitate like fresh transfer situations?
No, I'm worried about it.
Because, I don't mean like baby dancing together, but like we're in the same city. So let me just go drop it off at your window type situation. No.
Well, actually, I don't know the answer to that. I think that you could do that if a place doesn't have a quarantine period. And so what a quarantine period is a period of time that you can't use the sperm until, like, after the last donation, you can't use that sperm. And then the donor has to come back and do another STI panel, and then it's released to you. Mm-hmm. There are some places that don't have a quarantine period, in which case they might do fresh transfers. I don't help with at-home insemination unless you have a nurse midwife there and it's frozen, because I worry about the legal logistics of that.
Yeah, so this is a frozen sperm transfer situation. However, with a lot more choose your own adventure involved.
Yes, exactly.
But this is not something for someone who really wants to do it at home and get sperm dropped off on the window, which a couple actually did. That's, I'm only saying that because it's just a funny story they had. Anyway, okay, good to know. What's your other questions?
Do you have one?
What do you want?
Mine was like, how have families that have gone through this with your company, like how have they reported like the feeling of being connected with the donor and having that known donor?
It's so beautiful. Like even, I hate to like stereotype this, but like we have some straight male infertility couples and almost all of them come into this being like, the only reason I don't want to use your company is because I don't want to give the donor an update every year. And it's a lot of, I think there's a lot of stereotypes about like male figures not feeling like a parent if like they're not genetically related when they could have been had like not something medical happened, right? Mm-hmm. And even they, when they meet the donors, they're like, never mind, just kidding. We love this donor. Like there is no part of us that is worried. I've not had anyone yet that is still worried after meeting the donor about giving updates, like still having an icky feeling about it. The most other clients, I would say like queer couples. So first of all, 80-something percent of our donors are gay or bisexual men.
Oh, wow.
And they cannot donate at banks. They are not allowed to. I think that they're changing the rule now, but it slowly doesn't believe in change. Like,
They did rare. Just announce that. It's slowly. But also, I learned recently that my donor's gay, which is hilarious.
Close it on the form.
And I have other friends who have donor conceived kids through banks and they found out that they're gay too. It's just funny. That's just a funny fact. Doesn't mean you're a gay donor. But I was like, yes, he's gay. Like,
but I will say that like queer families, when they meet a gay donor, especially, they're like, oh my God, I would have been friends with him. He's so sweet. We love that there's like more love for the kid out there. There's someone else that cares about this kid's best interests. Mm-hmm. And we even had a couple who recently invited their donor to their wedding. They like got the donations earlier, but then we're getting married and then trying. And they sent me videos of the donor doing karaoke at their wedding and videos of like their parents hugging the donor and like everyone was crying. And it was like the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. Like, I love it. Our donor lives in Italy. We are literally going to visit him in 3 weeks. And he's already met our son, but we're going to like, you know, go see his family and like bring our son to his parents' house, who are delightful. Like, they are the perfect blend of like, we're here if you need us and we're so happy for you. And thank you for letting us be part of your story, but not like, those are my like, grandkids. Like, they've never said anything. And they literally speak Italian almost fully. You would think with the language barrier, they would say something that was wrong, but they have not at all. So we've just had like the most incredible experience. I think honestly, it matters so much that like you're able to see that this person's a good person and that like you're just able to know that you're setting your kid up for success of having like a really good person in their life if they so choose to have that person in their life.
Love that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you two have any other questions?
Do you have any? I don't think any more questions, because I was going to ask, do you have any families whose donors are more involved than once a year? And again, it sounds like it. And I'm very happy to hear that. I think that's what I would want.
Really?
It's I think about having kids, being two women, it would still be important for me to have like male role models in our child's lives. And we don't have that many men in our lives. So if we had like a donor who was open to that, right? Like a little bit more often, that would be important to me. So I'm happy that you've had families with that experience.
Yeah. And I think donors think that's so beautiful, especially the ones that are queer, that are like, I get to help another queer family in like creating amazing kids and giving them love, even from far, of being like a gunkle role or like a family friend or anything. Mm-hmm. And like just even being able to say happy birthday or sending something for the birthday. Yeah, like, there are so many people who find so much happiness from that, especially if they don't plan to have their own kids. And they view that as like a beautiful way to like pass on genes and to be able to like help someone that they understand the struggle of. And knowing how important this decision is, because if they had to make the decision for egg donors, it would be equally important. So I think they really get it. Like, I always question why we don't have gay donors for everyone, basically, because I think they're the ones who...
I mean, the gays are the best, so let's be real.
I had no idea queer that folks are the best. Couldn't donate sperm. Yeah. That was news to me.
It's the same. It's because, and also it's the donation of blood, too, that they just lifted that ban. But, you know, who knows if they're actually, like, implementing letting queer men donate. And it's all, you know, based in some biased shit, to use technical terms.
And gay men still can't donate blood if they've like had a sexual partner in the last like X amount of days, which most have. And it's like, they still put so many stipulations that they can't. They just like made it seem like they can. So we talked a lot. We were at Pride in DC this last weekend for the company. And a lot of men came up to me and were like, would love to donate, but like, is it going to be the same as like blood donation, where I can, but I can't if I've done anything that like is who I am. And I was like,
right.
Oh my God, I didn't even know that was the case. So it's enraging. Right. It's enraging.
I have one more question. And also, I just want to say, like, honestly, hearing you talk about like the having this donor so involved actually gives me like scared feeling inside. Right. So like, if it makes you feel good, then you're onto something, because it's making me feel another type of way. Do you know what I mean? Like, so that's like a telling sign in your hearts, which is cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also just an old lesbian who already has my babies. And like, I'm like, probably the fear is like, oh my God, no. These are mine. You know what I mean? Because I'm already done. I'm done with that. That book has shut in my mind. And it's just interesting. So if you're getting like a fuzzy feeling... interesting.
It was nice to see like your reaction to hearing how this works and being like, oh, like I kind of like how this is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I didn't know that.
Oh, look at that. Okay. My question. Okay. I have this last question. Where do you find them? Where do you find these dudes?
I mean, a lot of it is outreach, right? We have our company name behind us. We have a lot, like now we have like a bunch of clients and success stories and all of that. And it's a lot of just being like, would you be open to this? I know in the past you've not been able to donate, but it's different for known donors. Mm-hmm. We're trying to find people who hadn't considered being donors before and aren't like knocking at our door begging to be a donor, because that weirds me out a little bit. But people who are like, ooh, if it was in a really controlled setting where I knew there were only going to be like a few families out there, this sounds beautiful. And it sounds like a way for me to like really like leave my mark and help people. And so that's partly how we find people. Also, our donors have, like, a lot of our donors are referrals from our other donors. So our other donors have, like, gone through this process and been like, oh my gosh, you have to talk to this company. Like, they're ethical, they're queer, like, owned, like, you know, it's just been such a great experience. And then they bring their friends on and they're like, well, I want to do this. Like, this sounds incredible. And there are a few people who have reached out, like, especially we've had a few influencers who have used our services and posted about it. And like, people who have followed them have reached out being like, wow, I didn't even think about doing this to help people, but, like, this sounds amazing, especially knowing that, like what a difference it makes in their lives. Like, we've been able to watch this whole process through them, you know, stuff like that. So it's really a mix. It really depends. But
what is the, like, timeline? Like, if we wanted to get started, like, from start to finish, like, what's that approximation?
So from the start date, and we're usually like a month or two behind, like, with, like, just having, because we start everyone at the first of every month. So, like, it's usually about a month and a half, 2 months behind. From that date, it takes about 3 weeks to pick a donor. And it takes about 2 months to go through the steps, mostly because the genetic test takes 3 to 4 weeks. And that is a pain. Without the genetic test, like, if you pick a donor who's already donated or already been genetically tested because they have their own kid or anything like that, then you're looking at about 1 month to go through the steps.
Okay. That's shorter than I expected.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there are sometimes bumps. I'm going to say that's, like, an average, right? Like, that's, like, ideally, like, nothing too bad goes wrong or anything like that. And then the other thing is, if you have a quarantine period, which is what we talked about, at your clinic, which most don't, or have 35 days, so it wouldn't be too much, then add that on to the end too.
Does the genetic testing always happen no matter what?
If you have no genes that you're positive for out of a panel that's over 300, you do not need to test the donor at all. But we want to make sure that you, I mean, does it happen no matter what? No, I guess you could opt out. I don't know how the clinic would feel about that. The role of it, the point of it is that you're testing recessive genes. So it's genes that you might have a bad copy of. And if you have the same bad copy of a gene that the donor has, the kid has a 25% chance of getting your bad copy and his bad copy. And then they could have a really, really bad disease. Like, I carry cystic fibrosis. I do not have cystic fibrosis. I never will. But if the donor I used also had a bad copy of cystic fibrosis, our kid could have cystic fibrosis. So it's really just making sure you're giving kids the best chance at being, like, as healthy as possible with something that you could avoid, right?
And this is one of those things with queer families where we can kind of control that stuff. And, like, a lot of straight couples don't know either one of them carries this gene, and and then we go there, right? We're really building these families with so much intention, as you see, and so much love, and so many steps and questions are asked before we even get to our path. That's the point of this, right? We're the most intentional families out there. Come on now. Let's be real. We're, like, we're going through, we have, how many episodes are we planning just to go through the different ways?
I think it's like 5 or 6.
Even do it, right? So it's a testament to the intentionality of our beautiful, amazing families.
If you both could give us, like, a piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be? Like, as becoming parents or, like, going on this journey, what would that be?
I would say, like, being parents is, like, a whole nother topic. Like, that is the biggest learning curve you'll ever have in your entire life. And I went to law school and I thought that was the biggest, and it's not, in a good way. Like, you just, you're,
and
like,
also, oh, a bad way. Let's be real. It's hard. It's hard AF.
It is really,
it's hard.
A very big commitment. And it's it's a very new thing, right? None of us know how to, like, take care of a kid until they're your kid and they're right in front of you. But in terms of going through this process, I would say, no matter what, it sucks. I wish that I could tell you that you will feel perfectly happy in all ways about using a donor. But in reality, I wish you both could have a kid without a donor, right? Like, that is the dream. And I hope one day our company no longer exists because they have fixed all of the problems of infertility and, like, same-sex couples or whatever it is, right?
And we come up with some magical way that two uteri can bang together and create life. Like,
it would be amazing. But I will tell you, there's a way not to feel, like, totally discouraged. And I can say that because I've seen so many people go to us feeling like, oh my God, like, this is not what I want to be doing. And for some, everyone has their right path. And I'm glad that you're exploring all paths. So I'm not saying this is the right answer, but I'm saying you will find the right answer that doesn't make you feel so grossed out that you even have to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to say, I'm along the same lines, and a couple things. Trust your gut. which is basically what Danielle just said. Trust your gut. You know the best path for you. Also, know that however you plan this puppy out is not going to go the way you plan it. Just expect the unexpected. This is your first lesson in parenting. You are not in control of anything. You can do your best and you can make the best laid plans, and hopefully most of it will go the way you want, right? So expect the unexpected. And also, like Danielle said, this is the quote that got me through all my infertility. And it's exactly what you just said, Danielle. Like, in the end, your choice is the right choice. Everything will be okay in the end. Yeah. If it's not okay, it's not the end, right? So trust your gut and know that your choice is the best choice, and it will work out, whichever it is. And you're going to be happy.
And if you end up having kids, you're going to create your best friends. Like, that's what you're doing.
Oh, I was going to say you were going to be like totally like tired all the fucking time.
And yeah, but someone said once you're creating the people at your dinner table for the rest of your life. And
that's beautiful.
That is, Jamie's like, I wish they wouldn't be at my dinner table.
I'm like, wait. No, and also, they're going to come out, the little people, they come out and good luck. Like, you know what I mean? Yes. No matter what, this is the easy part. And it's so complicated, but then there's more things. So that's our advice. I think we both basically said the same thing.
Yeah.
Except I'm a little more jaded about it in the end. I have older kids. I don't know. Maybe
that's, I know, but mine had colic for a while and I'm still saying it. So.
Same girl. Oof. It's hard. It's hard. It's hard. It's also the most beautiful thing you will ever do.
Ever.
Yeah.
Childbirth, not so much, but.
Or maybe. It can be.
Or maybe.
Also, if you choose not to,
yeah,
it's also great and beautiful too, right? There's so many reasons not to, as well. I could name like 30 reasons right now not to.
That'll be another episode.
It is another episode. So we'll go into that later. I just wanted to know, like, what is your, because this is one of the big issues at these banks is diversity. And like, what does your pool look like? And how do you make sure that you're trying to check all the boxes of ethnicities and all the things?
Oh my God, I could go on this for a while and I won't, but like at Sperming, sometimes they charge extra for specific ethnicities. Like the donors was like, it is absolute madness. We have not done our updated numbers for the month yet. For when we had about 300 donors, we had 39 donors who identified as Black. We had 34 donors who identified as Latino, 23 donors who identified as Jewish, 19 donors who identified as Asian. And I definitely all of the numbers have, not sure about Jewish, but the other three have gone up since then. That's for great. Sure.
That's a point in favor. There you go.
It is very, very, very hard to find donors of different ethnicities at banks, and even in small companies around, you know, it's just very difficult to find them.
And they're working on it. They're working on changing it, but
this
is a fact. This is, and so, you know, it's something to take into account, depending on what kind of a donor you're looking for. You know, this has been great and wonderful. And, thank you so much for like chatting with us, Danielle.
Yeah. Thank you guys. Thanks for, doing all of the work you need to do to like make your first decision as parents, if you decide to go this route. if not, ignore what I just said. But it is amazing that you're putting thought into it and that you are trying to decide the best path for you both and for kids. And the fact that you're even thinking about it means that you're going to be incredible parents. So congratulations on the first part and starting it. And let me know if there's anything I can do at all. Okay.
Okay.
I love it. Oh my God. Thank you all. This has been beautiful. Look at us being so freaking intentional. Come on now. Come on.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.